Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And in part two of a two-part podcast series, once again, we are speaking with Monique Greenwood, who is the owner of the Aquaba Bed and Breakfast Inns. She's also the former editor-in-chief of Essence Magazine and is the star of Own TV's Checked In reality show. And for this episode, Monique's going to be diving a bit deeper into her Checked In reality TV show, as well as providing her take on the guest experience. Monique and Steve, how are you both doing today?
Great. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Monique. Thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, great. Now that we're back together again, let's jump in. So, Monique, let's talk about the Checked In reality TV show on Own TV. This is certainly exciting for us to be speaking with somebody who's had their own TV show, and it's awesome to have you on once again. And would really love to find out, like, how did the show come about? How did it come into play?
Well, basically, I got a call from maybe six or seven different production companies within the same week, all suggesting they thought I'd be perfect for a reality show. And as it turns out, a major network had put out a call to production houses saying that they were interested in a certain type of show, and we ended up checking all the boxes for that show. They had had great success with a show on Bravo called Below Deck, and so they wanted to do something that would be in the hospitality space, and they were hoping that it would be family-owned, owned by a woman, owned by a person of color, owned by a person who was outspoken. So that was check, 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 check. And so when they put that call out to production houses, then, of course, they did their research and found me. And we interviewed with several different production houses over Skype, and we then had to decide which one we wanted to go with. And we signed with Lionsgate, who then packaged us for a reality show and sent it out not only to the initial company network that had wanted to do a show, but to several companies, and they got into a little bidding back and forth. And one of the companies that was interested in a show on us was Oprah. And I basically said a little line in my sizzle reel that said, when the guests check in, they don't just bring their luggage. Sometimes they bring a lot of baggage. And that's when the innkeeper becomes almost like a therapist. And Oprah said, love that. And greenlit the project, and that's how it happened.
That's great. And certainly the show does really hone in on kind of the human interest, like therapy side of things. And that certainly resonated with Steve and I. And just overall, what was it like filming a reality TV show? None of us have really done it, but we often guess as to what it's like. So tell us about just the experience. Yeah.
Well, you know, reality shows, they also call it a docuseries, and basically it's an unscripted show. So the cameras capture the action as it happens, so nothing is planned out. And our show was very much in that vein. There are some reality shows where they kind of know what the situation is going to be and what's going to happen next. They don't have a script, but they do have a storyline that they're going for. And we were very much reality in the sense of, let whatever happens, happen. And we don't have to manufacture drama. We don't have to manufacture love, any of that, because those things are inherent in running a small business and in also servicing guests. So for us, we did not close our business. We operated as usual. We did notify all of the guests that were going to be at the house during the time of taping that we were doing a show, and we gave them an opportunity to opt out if they wanted to do that. There were some who did, but many who were like, you know, I'm ready for my close-up. And so, you know, we ran business as usual. Anybody who didn't want to be on camera during the breakfast scenes, for example, we did two breakfast seatings so they could be there without the disturbance of the cameras. But our crew was amazing because they were not trying to infringe on the guest experience and just wanted to kind of capture action as it happened. So we, for our first season, we basically did invite back a few guests whose stories I was somewhat familiar with, just in case everybody who was there, because they made a reservation, if there was nothing there that we could really play off of, at least I knew There was one couple in the house that weekend when we were taping that I knew a little bit about and thought had an interesting story or life, if you will. And then everybody else was there. And sometimes they ended up being camera shy and didn't want to really talk. And there was somebody else who was there who just happened to be there. And we got into a conversation that turned out to be a little bit more interesting. So we took about 5 days, I would say, to shoot a show, each episode, 4 to 5 days. And it was long days, you know, starting very early, as we all do as innkeepers with breakfast, and then ending, you know, late into the evening. But it was, you know, an amazing experience to do it.
That's awesome. Steve, I'm sure you have questions. I'll pass the baton to you, my friend.
Well, you answered the one question I was getting ready to ask is, you know, how long does it take to shoot one of these things? So you say on average about 5 days, and I guess it was more leading up to the weekend or kind of that didn't really matter as far as what time of the week
people were checking in. Well, for us, it mattered a little bit for me only because at the same time that we were shooting, I was doing an endowed chairmanship at Howard University. So I had to be on campus 3 days a week. So we would start in the afternoon on the first day. And then we did try to do it over the weekend just because our business, we're fully booked on the weekends at our Poconos location, which is where we shot. So, yeah, we just kind of had to make it work around my life coming back and forth from our D.C. location to the Poconos location. And when we also knew we'd have a full house of guests and the greatest opportunity to really have some wonderful engagement with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're from Brooklyn to Poconos is like 2 hours?
Yeah, about 2.5 hours. As long as I'm not leaving on a Friday evening when everybody else is trying to get the heck out of Dodge, I'm in good shape. Yeah, about 2.5 hours.
And you were driving. So, and then you were driving down to D.C. for 3 days out of the week, which is
about 4.5 hours. Yeah, I wasn't really spending much time in Brooklyn during the time of the show. It was really between D.C. and the Poconos. But, yeah, it was 4.5 to 5 hours up, 4.5 to 5 hours back every single week.
Wow.
So it was grueling. Wow. By the time we finished shooting the first season, I had strep throat and, you know, was kind of, you know, I needed to go check into somebody else's B&B because it was a lot. but it was a wonderful experience.
And that was, what was it, about a two-month thing overall? Did they just kind of go straight through for 2 months?
Yeah, about 2.5 months, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow. And now I'd like to hear some interesting stories. I think one of the main points is you talked before about your, I guess kind of your pride that it's a reality show, but it wasn't like you were stirring the pot. You were actually there to help out, which is your job as a, you know, as an innkeeper, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think anybody who's going to consider doing a workplace-based reality show has to remember that when the cameras turn off, you still have a business to run and a reputation to maintain. And so, you know, I wasn't going to do anything that was going to infringe upon my brand. So we're not going to, you know, I think if you're on certain networks, however, I will say this, you know, if I'd been on the initial network interested enough, I probably would have turned over a lot more tables and very quickly. And not turn them over to get other people seated, but to literally turn them over and throw a glass and do whatever, because that's what that genre has been, pretty, you know, high drama. But I was clear that that's not what we wanted to do. And I also made sure our lawyer negotiated that I was an executive producer on the show. So that meant I had some control over storyline and the portrayal of the show. So that was important to us. Yeah, no, but we certainly weren't going to do anything that would ruin the reputation of our brand, or certainly weren't going to talk about the guests behind their back and things like that. You know, it's never going to do that. And our show was really all about, you know, a beautiful place, beautiful people having a beautiful experience. That was it. Nothing more than that.
Do you have a standout episode or something that happened, whether it was filmed or not, that kind of stands out that I guess was either interesting or pretty cool or whatever? Do you have kind of like a favorite episode or time or couple or anything?
There's so many of them, I tell you. I mean, I think one of the storylines that ran throughout the entire season was whether or not my daughter would take over the family business. And we found that that was something that resonated very strongly with viewers, this pull of one following their passion. And then this idea of how do you balance that with legacy? So clearly, you know, I would love it if my daughter, and I only have one child, would take over the family business, and I've always desired that, and I believe in the best way to create generational wealth is to try to build business that can grow and sustain itself from one generation to the next. And so it was always my hope that she would do that, and she's an excellent innkeeper whenever she has filled in for me. But she wants to be a writer, and that's what she's drawn to do, and I can't seem to convince her that it's possible to do both. So, you know, it may not happen for me in the way that I'd like it to happen, but that was something that really resonated with people. And then, you know, yes, and I do want her to follow her passion. I think people should. And so, yeah, so that resonated. But I think that, you know, my husband is not really active in the business, and how we navigate a marriage when the business is in our home and he doesn't want to be involved, I think that was another thing that was consistent. But people really recall when Peebo Bryson checked in, and Peebo, of course, mm-hmm. is a Grammy Award-winning singer and just a major talent, and my husband is a uber fan of Peebo Bryson's, and I had put him on notice before he even arrived that he was coming and that his wife wanted some downtime and just wanted to chill, and I was like, please don't turn into this mm-hmm. soccer fan, you know, just maintain your cool. And of course, as soon as he walked through the door, Peebo walked through the door, my husband came barreling down the steps and, you know, yo, man, and started yep. singing Peebo Bryson songs to Peebo Bryson. And it was like, man, you got some big ones. You're going to sing my music to me. But they had a great time, and I just had to keep pulling them back every now and then throughout the weekend so that he and his wife could really have the quiet time that they were hoping to have. And mm-hmm. and what's amazing is that as a follow-up to the show, we aired the fact that they actually conceived their child
baby,
while they
right?
were with us.
Yeah,
exactly.
I saw
Which
that.
Yeah, cool.
They have a baby now. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I was going to
mm-hmm.
say, you must have done something right. Help out.
Exactly. So that was really a fun episode. And there were times that I was cool. completely caught off guard. I had a gentleman who called to make a reservation to bring his wife, and I said, oh, okay, great. Are you coming for anything special? Is it her birthday or an anniversary? He said, no, I'm just trying to get out the doghouse. And we both kind of laughed, and they came. And when they came in, I said to her, I said, oh, so you're, I can't remember her names, I say Angela. So you're Angela. Oh, your hubby really wants this weekend to be so special for you. He's just trying to get out the doghouse. And I chuckled, and she did not crack a smile. And she said, it's going to take more than a weekend. And it was like, whoa. And then I came because the evening and the weekend evolved, and as an episode continued to grow, we realized that he had been unfaithful in his marriage, and it wasn't the first time. Mm-hmm. And so that became one of those situations mm-hmm. where on air, I had to, you know, listen empathetically, not be too mad at him, understand why he did what he did, and then ultimately ended up suggesting that he get some personal therapy, because I certainly was not equipped to help him understand why he acts out in that way. But it was an interesting episode, and I went and asked my husband, and I didn't want to, but the producer said, go check in with your husband, see what he thinks about this. And that, to mm-hmm. me, is the most hysterical scene, because my husband, he was making sounds I've never heard before. It was like very guttural. It was like, and he couldn't speak a word. And then he finally said, what are you asking me for? You know, I was like, I told you, he's not going to have a conversation about this. Just don't put him on the spot too much. But it was, you know, lots of moments throughout the whole series.
Well, I can see, you know, why you're, well, one of the many reasons probably why you're such a successful innkeeper from the show. I mean, definitely the genuine feeling of empathy, compassion, whatever, I would say the desire to just help your guests with whatever they want, you know, and I can see where that, I guess, is also on the psychologist or psychiatrist side of the show as well, because mm-hmm. you seem to honestly, you know, listen and want to hear the story and want to help out in whatever way, whether that's, you know, counseling like, or whether that's, hey, let's do this activity. We'll find you something to do or whatever. So
it's true. I feel that the work that I do is really my calling. I think it's my purpose, the reason why I'm here. And I, you know, nothing brings me greater joy than to figure out how to bring more joy into someone else's life. So, yeah, I think also my journalistic skills in terms of being a good listener and asking the right question and hearing the answer, even if it's not spoken, you know, through body language. And so, you know, these are things that I think that are important and that I think I'm good at, and I love being able to use it in this way.
one other question about your daughter. So who is more stubborn, you or your daughter? Because you say she's stubborn about wanting to do her own thing, but sounds to me like, you know, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree.
Well, it's true. And I wouldn't say it's about being stubborn, but it is definitely about being driven and determined. And so she definitely can give right back out what I give her, you know. So we, you know, but at the same time, because of love, we are able to compromise. And I think ultimately I'm going to win. And the winning becomes the blending of blending of what we both desire, because at the end of the day, I desire for her to be happy. And I think that she can find that balance of, you know, keeping one eye on the business and while she's also doing her writing. I just have to show her how that can work. And I, like I said, I'm pretty obsessed by what I do. And so I haven't set the best example about balance. So I think if I do a better job at that, she'll come around at some point.
Well, it sounds to me like, regardless of where she ends up, that you have left a legacy, because it sounds like she's a very driven woman, and so you're passing that on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes.
Now, awesome. The show, talk about, you say it was only ever planned to be one season, so we're not going to see any more shows. And was that your decision up front? And what was the reasoning behind that? Is it mostly because it's too hard to focus on the business as well as do a show like that, or what?
I think both. For me, yes, it's very difficult to balance that. That's like a full-time thing. And I have, you know, I have five ends and to run, and I do want to have some semblance of a life. So I just think that it would have been too much. And a lot of these reality shows, especially those that are family-based, very few of these husband and wife teams that do reality shows last in their marriages. And I was concerned about that. You know, it's kind of a funny way to exist. And so, you know, I feel like we did that, and I've got about 10 other things I'd like to do, and so we move on to that from here. I also think, you know, on their side of it, they were only willing to commit to one episode, too, because, you know, the landscape is still changing, and a lot of shows can't make it if they don't have someone cursing somebody out, or, you know, someone getting a divorce, or somebody getting deathly ill. I mean, it's just the stakes of what kind of drama you need to have are very high. And so I don't know that we would have ever gotten to that point, because I don't think I would have taken it to that point. And, you know, when I look at even on Oprah's network now, the kinds of reality shows that are on there, they get pretty ratchet, and I'm just not willing to go there.
Yeah, I guess people are looking for a bad reason to watch, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a cool way to go. Anything else about Checked In that you want to talk about? Or
no, I think, you know, the exposure was phenomenal. You know, to have a one-hour show every week for 8 weeks was the kind of publicity and marketing that you can't pay for. And, you know, certainly the Oprah effect of my business is major, and we love that. We certainly will continue to do television shows or anything like that that will give us a platform to expose the beauty of staying at an inn, the beauty of our brand. So we do have an episode coming up of a show on CNBC that's going to air on January 1st. It's a new show called 5-Day Biz Flip, and it stars a husband and wife design build team that goes into retail businesses and try to see if they could find underutilized space to redo and create a new revenue stream. So they sought us out, and they said, what space do you have that you're not using? I said, none. And then I thought about it again, and I remembered we have a yard, a side yard, that won't grow grass because it has this huge chestnut tree. And so it always kind of looks like a dirt bowl, and I do nothing with it. And my husband has pretty much turned it into a Sanford and Son junkyard. And so they came, and they said, well, what would you want to do with this? And I said, you know, I'm always watching what the millennials are doing, and I can see that firsthand with my daughter. And I said, you know, this whole glamping thing, I'd love to figure out how I could create a glamping experience for my guests. And so we completely converted that yard within 5 days into a glamping garden. And it's been amazing. So it has an outdoor living room with the fireplace. There's a dining room with a table that seats 14. And there's a little outdoor kitchen. And we did two glamping tents that have queen size futon beds. And you know, chandeliers and gorgeous. Wow. And so that was a really fun episode. And so the whole show for that episode is on us. So that's another 1 hour show. And we think that would be great exposure. And we just had a fun time doing it. And the guests get to enjoy this whole new space and the whole new experience. We basically offer the glamping tents as an add-on to a night stay. So if they're booking a room, they can add on a glamping tent if they like to. And some people okay. sleep out there, and other people just like to cook out, and they have their individual fire pits, and they can make this. We give them a s'mores kit, and so they roast marshmallows, and, you know, so it's a fun thing. So, again, that's on CNBC, and that's on January 1st. Our episode airs at 10 p.m.
Excellent. Great. And that's in Brooklyn, right? That's your Brooklyn.
This is the Brooklyn location. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Wow. Glamping in New York City.
That's exactly right. Where else do you get that experience?
Yeah. That's definitely unique. That's cool.
Yeah. We have an outdoor movie screen, so we show movies outside. We can now serve breakfast outside underneath that major tree. So it's beautiful. It turns out really lovely.
Excellent. Good deal. Matt, should we go to kind of the last segment where we have a couple questions for Monique about kind of the future of, or where things are now and where she thinks they might be going? And I guess I was calling it the frictionless future questions. Are we good?
Sure. Let's do it. Yeah. You want me to run with questions, Steve?
Yeah. Go with the first one at least. Yeah,
okay.
Go for it.
All right. So Monique, the first question is, how do you find guest experience? How important is it to your B&B, and what strategies/tactics do you use to address it and improve it?
Well, guest experience is everything. When people ask what makes your space so unique, it's really about the guest and what we do to make sure that they leave with, you know, a memorable experience and feeling recharged and refreshed to live their best lives. So everything we do, we're guest-centric, and we want to make sure that they leave out of here becoming ambassadors for our brand. And so that starts with being a good listener and being intuitive about what they need, trying to anticipate what they need before they even need it. So we have lots of amenities loaded into our guest rooms, but it's really about creating a connectedness that happens while they're here, whether we help them to connect with one another or connect with us or connect with the other guest. That is really the guest experience. And we try to help them customize their stay. So whether it's about what they do while they're with us or what they have for breakfast or where they'd like to sit and have their afternoon tea, just like if they have any dietary restrictions, we want to just customize what it is they're looking to see happen. So it's everything for us.
What about outside of, you know, any experiences outside of your property? Talk about how you get involved and what connections, because I know you're a big kind of a, I guess, neighborhood or community type person.
Yes.
So do you have relationships like with other, you know, cool places where if a guest says, well, I want to do this, and you're like, okay, here's where you
mm-hmm.
go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we are very much community-minded, and we're very active in our local chamber associations, tourist boards, all of that. So we know, we have our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the cities where we do business, so we can refer them to what's happening, if something special. But then we also are really great friends with all of our local merchants, the restaurants and the boutiques and the activities places, whether it be a escape room or if they want to go to the theater or if they want to do a guided walking tour, whatever it is. We've done a lot of work to find out who those people are, what they are, and we can make those referrals. And so, you know, sometimes guests don't know what they want to do. They just want to have a good time. And so we try to help them kind of hone in on what would satisfy them, and then we hook them up with those people in the community. We don't really ask for a kickback from those vendors that we send people to. We're just being uber concierge hosts and making sure that they can get out there and love the cities that we love, you know, while they're here, even if for a day.
Excellent.
All right.
All right, Matt, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So the next question is, if you can get an hour of time with a leading expert/consultant in the B&B industry, what are the two or three most important questions you would like to ask that person?
Well, one of the things that I've recently done, well, in the last 2 years, I've gotten involved with an innkeeper forum, and it's through an organization called Chief Executive Boards. And there are about 14 of the, what I would say are the smartest innkeepers in the industry who are on the board, and they basically, we serve as each other's board of directors. And so we get together 2 to 3 times a year, and we bring what is our hot pressing issue, and we allow them all to help us with that. For me right now, if I could really talk to somebody, a leading expert, I want to be able to understand strategy for using OTAs, I would say. We have never used an OTA, and I know that we're oddballs in that sense in this industry because most people don't do it without an OTA support, but we've never done Expedia, Bookings.com, Hotels.com, Travelocity, any of that stuff. So we really do rely on our guests to be our ambassadors, get the word out and tell their friends and family and make sure that we do a great job so that when our reviews show up on TripAdvisor, that speaks volumes for us as well. But we probably are going to start with the OTAs, especially for our Philadelphia location, which is our newest location, because we realize that those are a lot of eyeballs that those platforms can bring us, and we just need people to know that we're now in Philadelphia and we need to do better with our occupancy during the week so that our core customer tends to be a pleasure traveler coming on the weekend. And we're hoping that if we do lift some of our inventory with the OTAs, it will help us with our midweek business. So if the leading expert has specific strategy for that with OTAs, and probably also with, you know, we haven't done very much with changing our rates, really, just kind of doing, you know, playing with rates based on occupancy. So those are the two areas that I think I would ask the leading expert to help me with.
Excellent. Good. Cool. Thank you.
All right. Should I ask the last one, Steve, or do you want to take that one?
I'll take it. Just have the last word. Probably.
There we go.
Really.
There we go.
Okay. What is the percentage mix of guests that stay at your B&B based upon the following 3 age groups, and how are those percentages trending? Break it up between under 40, 40 to 60, and over 60. So out of those 3 age groups, what would you say is the percentage mix now, and what are the trends that you're seeing with those demographics?
Okay. We have a real wide range of guests coming in, speak from a demographics point of view, but I would say the majority of our guests are in the 40 to 60 range, and I don't know if that's because that's where I am or not, but that's where they seem to be. And trending would be the under 40, and we're doing things like our glamping garden and trying to think of different types of experiences that a younger guest would like to have, and we're doing a better job with our social media on platforms like Instagram versus just Facebook, which tends to skew a little older. So right now our sweet spot is probably the 40 to 60, but we're definitely trending toward younger guests as well. And we're excited about that. I think some of our younger guests, you know, like Airbnb platform has helped them to understand that there are other ways to stay, not just in the hotel. And so now they are looking at, oh, okay, so we get the Airbnb unhosted stay. Now we have something in between the Airbnb unhosted stay and the big hotel. There's the B&B, which is going to give us that kind of experience that we're looking for, because millennials do want to, you know, have something new and something different.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is the percentage right now, would you say, of under 40?
Oh,
like
20, you know,
20% of your guests?
It varies based on location. Under 40, okay. at our Poconos location, we're probably, it's high, probably even more there.
Really? Okay.
Probably about 65%, 70% under 40. And the balance of that would be, you know, 40 to 60. And then, but the other locations under 40 is probably somewhere around 40%.
Okay. Yeah, my perception would be, okay, the Poconos, it's like you say, it's really a resort,
mm-hmm.
and it's a destination. And whereas, you know, the urban areas, I would think would be, you know, where the younger crowd would want to go for all the experiences around. And are they willing to drive many hours to get to the Poconos and just kind of unwind? But it sounds like that's the deal.
Yeah, exactly. It is that way. It's the reverse of what you may have thought. Yes, because the younger people may live in the urban areas. That's what they know. They're trying to experience something
mm-hmm.
that they don't know. So they love coming up to the Poconos, and they'll go to the farmers markets while they're up there. They may even go to the, you know, county fair. So they're having those different experiences other than what they would get in a city. We get a lot of that 40 to 60 age range and even over 60 age range in our city locations, primarily because we get quite a few folks who are grandparents who are coming to visit their adult kids and their new grandchild, and they live around the corner from the DC location or the Brooklyn location or the Philly location, or they have kids who are in college at an American university or Georgetown University in DC, or kids in college at Drexel or UPenn in Philadelphia. We're in walking distance from those universities, and so that's going to be an older person who is visiting a younger person who lives in a dorm or in the neighborhood because they're in college or having their first grandchild.
Interesting. Cool. Anything else to add?
No, I don't have anything else to add, really, except for, you know, I think I love this industry, and I hope that I can continue to attract other people who will help deliver our mission. You know, with staffing, I think that's always a challenge. You know, I haven't figured out how to put myself on a Xerox machine and copy myself or anything. So, you know, my challenge consistently is, you know, how do we find people who are going to be as jazzed about, you know, creating amazing experiences for guests as I am.
Excellent. Matt, I'll turn it over.
Perfect. I will take it out. Okay. And everybody, you just heard our guest for this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast was Monique Greenwood, who is the owner of the Aquaba Bed and Breakfast Inn. She's also the former editor-in-chief of Essence and the star of OWN TV's Checked In reality show. And as you heard in part two of our two-part series, Monique was kind enough to discuss her TV show, Checked In, the reality TV show, as well as her philosophy behind enhancing the guest experience. And Monique and Steve, thank you both for your time today.
Thank you, guys. Take good care.
Thank you.
All right, Monique. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Yep.